Welcome to our radio station. Welcome to our show. Welcome to Oldenburg. Don, you've been here for 4 days now.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your impressions of this festival.
Well, I'm first of all, I'm tired. There's a lot of festivities. There's a lot of a celebration. There's a lot of people to meet and talk to. I'm overwhelmed with the festival entirely, and it's been a kind of a whirlwind 4 days. So it's been great, and especially Torsten and Deborah and everybody that's working for the festival have been fabulous. So
the first movie in the tribute is a science fiction story from the early 80s. It's a movie that has been shown in Germany in the cinemas as well, called Der Android, or Android as it is in the original title. This is your first movie, when I remember correctly, as an actor, but also as a screenwriter. So can you tell us a little bit about the way you came to Roger Corman and his production company, and from there to Android?
I was working for Roger in the early 80s as a set carpenter. The situation over there was very fluid. People moved from one job to another. They had just shot a movie, I'm pretty sure it was Galaxy of Terror, and Roger had made it known that if somebody could come up with some kind of story that could be shot on the same set, he would be willing to do it. One of my co-workers and also someone that was a writer, I've been a writer for a long time at that point, not a screenwriter necessarily. I worked in plays and the theater, and I had also written, I think, a couple of screenplays by that time, but he came up with an idea with his brother, Jim Riegel and Will Riegel. And we presented it, and he came to me. We began working on the screenplay, and we presented it to Roger, and they said yes. The idea of me playing the part, Jim wanted me to play the part, but I didn't think that was going to happen. I had been acting in the theater in a small way before this. And I didn't think it was possible that Roger was going to go. I had a very iffy relationship for Roger at that point anyway, and I didn't think it was going to go. But when it came time for me to meet Roger about a week before the shooting was going to start, I sat in his office, and he had some emergency came up, and he couldn't meet me. And so I just left there, and we started the movie. So I never met with him, so... That's how it came about.
What struck me about this movie when I was rewatching is it's not the typical fare of those days. No big fights, no big shootouts and stuff like this. There is action in it, but it's also some sort of chamber piece. It's about a robot, an android, who's trying to be in love, to get feelings, to be sort of human. So it reminds us of the great themes of science fiction, of Frankenstein, Pinocchio even. So can you tell us a little bit about the idea that you had for the screenplay and for the movie?
I think the screenplay had, a lot of the literary references, the Pinocchio, the Frankenstein, the Galatea, the Pygmalion, iRobot, all of those. Almost all the robot literature has this underpinning of what it means to be human and what it means to be, you know, a cyborg or a mechanical, and it's as relevant today as, you know, with AI, it's as relevant as it always has been. I think that's always the theme of robot movies. So that was in the original idea. The idea of it being a chamber piece, I think, was both is what we could do as well as what the story was about. The budget, you're limited by the budget. It's, you know, when you have, you're limited by the form that you're in. So that was, and that limitation is a good thing, as well as a limitation.
The title figure you are portraying, Max, is not credited because, the other way around, you are not credited as the actor. You are credited for the screenplay, but it's like Max plays himself. What was that idea, that your name is not somewhere in the credits?
In some ways it was a joke, but in another way, why did I need a credit? I mean, nobody was going to actually leave the theater thinking that Max was actually an android. And it was a joke. Not a joke on anybody, but it was just a... it wasn't that significant in terms... And if I was going to be known, nobody was going to say, well, who played, you know... there was no going to be a long search through some archive to find out who played Max. So it was, you know, there was no risk to it at all.
The main character is portrayed by Klaus Kinski, who is, of course, a key figure in German cinema, but also in genre cinema. He has been always put up as a mad scientist in a lot of movies. So how was it playing with him? I heard it's like he is only doing this for like cashing in and stuff like that, but there's not much to be cashed in a Roger Corman movie, I guess. So how did you work with him, and what was your impression of Kinski?
Well, Klaus got the money they asked for, so I don't know if we would call that cashing in or not. I never got the sense while working with him that he, there was no huge commitment. The part didn't require, you know, a Geary Wrath of God kind of acting. He was professional in most ways. He was Klaus, completely Klaus in all other ways. And, he was not a guy you, I mean, he was not somebody that was wanting to pal around not with me at any rate, and I don't know if he palled around with anybody else on the set, but he was professional enough. So, I mean, there were some issues, but they were Klaus issues that I'm sure other people who have worked with him have experienced.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the Critters franchise, because that is a very much loved franchise also in Germany, and a great hit on VHS in those days, but also in the cinema. It's still fun to watch. So I think I watched 1 and 2 last week again, and it's incredible how well they hold up in terms of entertainment, but also in terms of special effects.
I'm very happy that you feel that way. I haven't seen them in a while either. Last night was the first time I've seen Critters in quite a long time. Since I've been out of the business, I haven't spent a lot of time, you know, looking back at my own work. When I was working, I didn't really like watching myself. So it's not unusual for me to have not seen myself. But I did see it the other night again, and I was pleasantly surprised. There were some things that gave me a few giggles. And the special, you know, they do hold up. We did a lot with what we had. So that's the way I feel about it. I'm going to see Critters 2 tonight, and I haven't seen it in quite a while. There was a screening in... big screening in Los Angeles not too long ago that my entire family went to, but I was out of town. And it was the first time actually many of my grandchildren were aware that I was actually in movies. So that was a big event. So
the character you're playing in all four of these movies, Charlie McFadden, of course, it's quite an unlikely hero in terms of not the type of person you would think about in saving the world, if you think about it. But it makes perfect sense in the universe of Critters. So that's a fun character, and I think a lot of people have this character in mind when they think about you.
Yeah, I've been surprised in the past, in the last 5 or 10 years, at how much that character has influenced and inspired and has been in people's consciousness. I guess when they were young and they saw it, they identified with him. And there's, you know, the character is, you know, he's an everyman kind of character. He's clumsy. He has great, gigantic flaws. And I think that's what brings people to him. He's not the a regular character that people associate with being a hero. But, I mean, in fact, who are real heroes? And they're going to be people like everyday people. Otherwise, they're not really heroes, are they? It's the normal kind of everyday person who becomes, does something extraordinary that we say, oh, what a hero. So, but I'm always, I've been surprised in the past, and I have been pleasantly surprised at how much Charlie has gotten into consciousness of people.
The last movie here for the tribute is a film that is not at all a genre film in terms of science fiction, but it has some genre elements in terms of a thriller or film noir, if we like. That's, of course, Slam Dance, a movie by Wayne Wang. And again, this is a movie where you wrote the screenplay for.
Yes. The script was finished well before we began to shoot the movie. I know my brother, one of the producers, can give you some information of how that was put together. It was definitely noir in my mind. And as I watched it also for the first time in quite a while last night. And I was struck by obviously I was working out some underlying demons, which is an appropriate noir subject. And yeah, there's some personal elements to it that are well disguised. And I, you know, and by and large, it works. It worked better, I think, in the screenplay than it does in the movie. There were some things dropped in the shooting that might have made some things more clear. But by and large, it still works, and it's very nice to look at. I like the characters very much. And the women look beautiful in it, which is very important in a noir, obviously. It's been a great experience to see it again.
Wayne Wang, the director, became famous a little bit later with films like Smoke and Blue in the Face and others. But you always had a production with Virginia Madsen and Harry Dean Stanton. So this was totally different in terms of casting and seriousness.
Yeah, apparently, and as I've been told, the script appealed to actors. Tom, again, apparently, read the script at a friend's house he was sleeping at and came in on his own and asked to read for it. So it appealed to, we didn't have any problem getting people to come in to see it, to read for it. So it must have appealed to actors. And I mean, I think it was written to appeal to actors as well.
So that's a good tribute, because it's like four different movies where you all were involved in some way or another with the writing and also starring in. Why did you choose, together with Thorsten, only the early stuff, so to speak? Or why is it specifically that you landed on those four movies for the tribute?
Well, there's not much more in my, you know, in my oeuvre. I worked in the 80s, early 80s. Later, I wrote several screenplays for the studios, none of which got made or ended up being made. We came close on several of them. I did more work as an actor in television, small parts in movies, etc. So there's really not a lot to pick from later in my career, and my career kind of petered out. So both because of me and because of the, you know, it was a divorce it was a mutually agreed upon a divorce, apparently. So
it's interesting that this year's festival guests, especially in the tribute and the retrospective, are all sort of mavericks who are always on the fringe of Hollywood and trying to get projects made and doing stuff, but they have always this friction with the studios or the big studios. If you look at Michael Wadley, he's done only two feature films, really. He's worked a lot in documentary movies. And Guercio, James William, he has done one feature film. So it's the smallest retrospective in the world this year. If you take a look at those workers in the industry and those directors and writers and cameramen as well, do you think it's a fitting situation for the three of you to be here and be presented with your work?
Well, yes, I noticed that as well. I mean, obviously, it's hard to miss, but yes, there's a lot, many of us that worked early and had some success, but at the same time didn't stick with it. I think in Michael Wadley's case, I'm almost glad because he's the kind of work that he and his wife do, which is, you know, about the planet. Jim Guercio seems quite happy in his life. So, and I'm pretty content. I mean, I would go back to working again if I could, if somebody, you know, if somebody got behind me. But if not, it's not like everybody that has something happen in Hollywood goes on to, you know, huge heights. I'm more of the norm than I'm not. So it's just the business. That's the way the business is. It doesn't necessarily keep you alive for the rest of your life.
On the upside, if you see Electra Glide in Blue or Woodstock or Wolfen, some people, and your movies as well, if you only made a handful of movies and they're good movies, people will remember those for a long time because you have not had the chance to make any bad ones.
That's true. So, yeah, it's like dying early is a good help also, if you can look at it that way.
But you didn't do that.
So no, we're glad we can talk. I haven't accomplished that yet.
Okay, thank you very much for taking the time to talk a little bit about your tribute here. And the rest of the festival is going on for this day, so you have the chance to meet some people and see some movies. So what are your plans for today? Are you seeing your own movie?
We're going to see, I mean, we've seen some movies. I saw Harry Curry, and I saw Keep Quiet. I'm very impressed with those. I've talked to both of those directors and actors, and I'm very impressed, and they're young. I think they're going to have a career. So it's very important. And also other people. I've met younger filmmakers who from Colombia who were somewhat inspired by my work, which makes me very happy. So that's really why I'm here. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.